From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and I begin today with a programming note. We had planned to bring you a conversation with State Senator Christina Castro, the new co-chair of the Latino Caucus, and in just the last couple of days, one of the people being put forward as a potential successor to Michael Madigan as head of the Democratic Party of Illinois. Unfortunately, an aide to Senator Castro wrote us this morning canceling, saying an unexpected matter changed the senator's schedule. We hope to bring you that interview soon. So instead, we begin today by revisiting my conversation with author Catherine May, whose latest book is Wintering, The Power of Rest and Retreat in Difficult Times. Winter can be cold, dark, and dreary. May writes, it can be a fallow period in our lives when we're feeling isolated, alone, or blocked from progress. But by embracing winter, both the literal and more figurative versions, we can come out on the other side. Here now is my conversation with Catherine May, who connected with us from Whitstable, England. Hello, Catherine. Thank you for joining us from across the ocean today on the 21st.
Hello. Thanks very much for having me. I assure you it's just as cold over here.
And quite gray in central Illinois today as well, which I gather from the pictures is not an uncommon experience in your part of the world. Catherine, in the opening pages of the book, you talk about how wintering is a season in the cold, but also a period in life. Can you share more about this concept of wintering?
Yeah, so I use the term wintering as something that can happen to us at any point in the year. And I think actually over the last 12 months, we've been in more or less permanent winter, or that's how it can feel. So wintering is a time in your life when you kind of fall through the cracks. So you feel cut off, left out. You feel like everything's carrying on without you. You feel unable to go out into the world. And I never seek to say that it's anything other than a really deeply painful time in life, but I do think it's inevitable. I don't think we can avoid these personal winters, even outside of a massive global pandemic. And I do think that if we can learn to engage with our winters, and as you say, lean into them, we can actually learn a lot from them. And we can certainly come out of them having learned something rather than having just tried to resist it and pretend it's not happening.
Well, before we get into leaning into it, you write about a few experiences that you had, winters, so to speak, as a 17-year-old with undiagnosed autism, and how that left you feeling out in the cold. And then more recently, around your 40th birthday, where you felt out of sync with everyday life. Can you talk more about these metaphorical representations of winter in your life?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I like to say I'm an expert winterer because I've been through so many personal winters. Growing up autistic and undiagnosed, like so many girls my age, or I'm calling myself a girl now, I mean, women my age grew up undiagnosed, meant that I felt like a permanent outsider, and it took a very heavy toll on my mental health. So by the time I was 17, I was severely depressed and I had a breakdown that took me out of school and out of everyday life for a good 6 months. And after that, I learned to recognize this pattern in my life of these crashes, these winters, these times when everything fell apart. They came for different reasons. And the one I wrote about in the book was maybe a more minor winter than one of those, but a really bitter one. My husband became ill, then I became ill. I left my job, and then my son had to be taken out of school because he was no longer coping. He was very, very stressed. So we had this big, perfect storm of life events that meant that we felt very outside for a long time, very much like we weren't part of the kind of everyday congress of things. And I happened to be writing the book while it happened. And so the book kind of walks with me through that time and all the different moments that happen in a winter, you know, the moments of grief, the moments of paranoia, the moments of fear, the times when you can't sleep, the times when you can't sit still. And that's what the book's an account of, really.
Well, let's talk about that then, because you write about embracing the cold and the dark, both literally and figuratively. The subtitle of the book is The Power of Rest and Retreat in Difficult Times. So how did you come to find that through your experiences?
Well, I should confess right away that I'm a bit of a winter lover. So it did help me that I was in the winter season. I wouldn't have been very happy if it was blazing sun. I'd have probably survived it less well. But actually, I think what winter, whether it's like a metaphorical winter or a cold winter, invites us to do is to withdraw into ourselves for a while, to embrace solitude and to embrace the comforts of home, to enter a reflective phase. In Celtic mythology, winter was called a gestational time, a time when we kind of brewed ideas and kind of reflected on things ready for the next stage. And I think that for me, that's what really helps, kind of burrowing into slow life and learning to resist that feeling that I had to be busy all the time in order to be a valuable, important person in the world. And instead asking what this winter was trying to show me. And actually, it was trying to show me that I was getting exhausted over and over again, and that I needed to learn to live my life in a very different way in order to carry on surviving and not to just keep throwing myself at the outside world and failing at it.
So I'm curious about, you said you love winter, and that helped you. What are the, you live in, is it Whitstable? Am I saying that right?
Whitstable, yeah.
Whitstable, yeah. Thank you. In England, which is, I'm looking at a map, I see it's near Canterbury. I don't know if that is the Canterbury of the
yes,
tales
with which. Yes, that's the Canterbury, yeah. Yes, the okay. Cathedral and the tales, yeah.
So this is a coastal town I don't know if you call it the east coast of England.
Yeah, very far southeast, yeah.
Okay, so what are winters like there?
I have to say, we have extremely mild winters, which I find very, very frustrating. So right now on my Instagram feed, loads of my friends across the country have gotten beautiful snow, and I have had pouring rain for about the last 5 days, which is about as nasty as it gets in Whitstable. We get snow maybe every 5 years. So actually, the winters are very mild here, a bit soggy, very grey, but I think they're probably preferable for most people. For me, they're very disappointing.
If you're just tuning in, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Today, we're revisiting my conversation with Catherine May, author of Wintering, The Power of Rest and Retreat in Difficult Times. Okay, back to my conversation with Catherine May, picking up actually with a tweet we got from a listener during the broadcast. Somebody goes by An Ordinary Dame, says, I always wanted a cozy fireplace for gray days, but live in a house that doesn't have one. Then 3 years ago, we figured out that we could just play YouTube videos of fireplaces on our TV, and it tricks my brain into relaxing. Really makes me happy. What advice do you have, Catherine, for our listeners on embracing winter, if that doesn't come as naturally to them as it might have to you?
I love the idea of YouTube fires. I think that's an absolutely fabulous idea. Because actually, what it's about, I think it's about two things for me. One is to really let yourself feel the cold. We've all got very afraid of feeling the cold these days. And we're not used to shivering or having to warm up again, or just to change out of wet clothes. You know, we tend to stay in our air-conditioned houses or our centrally heated houses as much as we can. But actually, experiencing the cold and aligning ourselves with the patterns of daylight in winter really helps our bodies to adjust, because we evolve to understand these different seasons, to even process our food differently in the winter to in the summer. And so we need to get out there in order to let our bodies engage with that. I think that's really important. But the kind of symmetrical opposite of that is that we should burrow into our comfort as much as we can. You know, this is not a time to deny ourselves anything. Keep ourselves as warm and cozy as possible. Fill the house with light. Like, I've got fairy lights everywhere at the moment. The Christmas decorations should have gone down, but I haven't taken mine down because I want twinkly light all over the house. I've got lamps dotted everywhere. I've got candles everywhere. I quite often light my fire in the evening. I have got a fire because those things are really important to me. You know, whatever it is that comforts you, you have full permission to do that in the winter. You don't have to deny yourself anything just because other people are suffering harder. And it's about finding that balance between knowing the season and knowing that in a really physical, bodily sense, and letting yourself feel as comfy and as at home as possible, I think.
Yeah, and in your embrace of winter, and a moment ago you talked about the cold and not denying ourselves pleasures, but also not denying ourselves that experience of cold, and sort of going with what nature has in store for us in the winter. you sleep more in winter, right? And this sort of dovetails with the ways that other creatures endure winter, right? We have less daylight, at least those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, at this time of year. And this is animals that are not humans are much better at responding to this change in the season than we are, right?
Yeah, they definitely are. And I mean, obviously, we all learn about hibernation as a child and find it very fascinating. But I never really understood the mechanisms of hibernation until I met a hibernating dormouse in the course of researching the book. And dormice, when they hibernate, they're these very cute little kind of hamster-like things. They drop their body temperature right down to just above freezing. So when I picked it up, it was freezing cold. And they do that to be as efficient as possible with their body processes to like limit the calories they're burning as much as possible. And that's how they survive the winter. Other animals drop into patterns of torpor. That's something that bears do. You know, they go into very deep sleep for a while, but they wake up regularly as well. And there's some evidence recently that possibly in our very deep past, humans might have done that too, although I've got some big doubts about that. But what I learned as well was that our own sleep patterns are supposed to adapt to winter. That actually, if you leave humans to their natural devices, they don't sleep all through night in winter, but instead they go to sleep for a few hours once the light goes, and then wake up for quite a long period in the middle of the night before going back to sleep again. And that's something that we often interpret as insomnia and see as a pathology in our life. But I learned to embrace that while I was researching wintering. And I learned to just get up in the night and to start enjoying what used to be called the watch in the middle of the night. And that watch would have been so familiar to people before electric light came in. So even 100, 150 years ago, it would have been so common for whole families to wake up in the night in the middle of winter and get on with something quiet and meditative and soothing before going back to bed again. And I think that's a skill that we could relearn, because actually it becomes this very valuable time in the middle of the night when you get to enjoy a very different state of mind, I think, something much more contemplative and meditative.
I love the idea of the second sleep, the medieval second sleep, and filling it with a YouTube fire.
no screens.
No screens, okay. And you mentioned a moment ago torpor, which I think would adequately describe my approach to winter if I did not have children who had other ideas about my wakefulness patterns.
They still like the early mornings, even in the winter, don't they, kids?
Yeah. Yes, they do. You know, on a more serious note, though, we are obviously in the midst of a global pandemic, and a lot of people are feeling loneliness and isolation and sadness and it may be even amplified over what they would normally experience in winter. What do you have to say to people who are feeling that way?
I think we need to reach out as much as we can and in as many ways as we can. I mean, thank goodness this pandemic came at a time when technology has developed to the point where we can see each other on a screen. I know it's not the same. I know it's not good enough. I know it's not frustrating. But I really think that as this crisis wears on, we must almost discipline ourselves into keeping in contact, because that's something that it's natural for us to do in the winter, to gather in order to find cheer. I also think that we can help kind of pass the time in a way, or mark the time, by making sure we take part in sort of rituals or spiritual practices, whatever your belief leads you to, that help us to engage with the way that time's passing. So I looked at some very ancient British ways that we marked the passing of the season, looked at the roots of Halloween, looked at the roots of Christmas, and began to notice the moments like midwinter, when we're about to make that change from the shortest day to the light coming back again. And those used to have huge ritual significance for us. And I think we can find that again. And it really helps us to notice the light coming back into the world, for example. I'd also say that solitude is something that you can choose, even if it's been thrust upon you. So it's another place where we can lean in to the things that it gives us, to that extra time and space to maybe learn something or to just to rest and relax and quite enjoy that lack of human company. I think one of the big problems can be that we feel very lonely within our families at the moment because the days feel so repetitive. So it's all about mixing it up, like keeping that pace up, even if it feels a bit more, you know, like once more with feeling sometimes and feels a bit forced. I think sometimes we can fake it till we feel it. And we have to keep doing that because we must keep our spirits up.
And I love that idea of noting the light coming back in. My children are fortunate enough to be able to go to school in person, and I'm picking them up at a time of day where I get to see the sunset almost every day, which is not something that in my old work life, working in an office, I was usually there till after dark. And it's been great seeing the sun at the end of every day. So
it's really interesting. Once you start noticing these things, you really can't stop noticing them. I mean, I try and notice what phase the moon's in, for example. I just try and notice how cold it is every morning at the moment. Certainly noticing the light gradually coming back, both in the morning and the evening. And there is progress. It does come. We are past the darkest point of winter now, and it's so important to remember that.
That is a lovely place, I think, to end our conversation. Our guest has been author Catherine May. Her latest book is out now. It's called Wintering, The Power of Rest and Retreat in Difficult Times. It's a beautiful orange book here in the States. I've seen it on the feature table at my local Barnes & Noble. Catherine, thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Thank you.